From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of March, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. We'll hear about the weather forecast from Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics, and we'll discuss the cash grain market with Greg Johnson of TGM Total Grain Marketing from right here in Champaign County. And we'll do it all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today settled at $7.48 and a quarter. It was 14 and a quarter cents lower. The high there at 7.67 and a half. By the way, the low at 7.40. July 7.18 and a half, down 10 and a quarter. New crop December 2 and 3 quarters lower at $6.52 and a half. That trading range from 6.45 to 6.58. Beans settled at $16.70 and a half cents, down 5 and a half cents. In the May, July down 4 and a half at $16.46 and three quarters. November beans a dime lower. They settled at $15.81. They did trade above $15, or at $14.81. They did trade above $15 today at $15.04 and a half for the high. The low there at $14.75 and a quarter. The bean meal up 7 and a quarter at $484.30, and the bean oil at $73.95, down $2.08. Wheat futures 10 and a quarter lower for the soft red at 10.96 and a quarter in the May. Harvest month July down 7 and a quarter at $10.70, and the hard red May at $11 even, up 10 and 3 quarters, and the July there 4 and a half higher at $10.85 and a half cents. Live cattle futures finished the lead option at 135.70. That's the June, actually, up $2.75. May feeder cattle at $167.45 per 100 pounds, $3.72 and a half higher, and lean hogs at $119.35, up $1.17 and a half for the day. Crude oil $102.70 a barrel, down $6.63. The diesel fuel or heating oil 12 and 3 tenths of a cent lower at $3.29 and 4 tenths, and the wholesale price of gasoline now at $3.13 and 6 tenths of a cent per gallon. That's down 14 and 4 tenths of a cent for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 92 points lower at 32,835. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, to discuss these markets and what has happened throughout the day today in Chicago and overnight, too. Thank you. How did things go overnight and into the day trade today, Kurt?
Well, overnight we were called as kind of steady, firm, and the thing giddy-upped right out of the chute there, particularly on beans. Higher world vegetable oil overnight there for a while, and just the urgency to get some ownership on. But as we moved through the evening trade, we kind of lost enthusiasm. In fact, most of the day we traded kind of soft, backing and filling. Seems like the trade's kind of out of bullish news for right now, that is, or just still a lot of uncertainty out there. Technically, we made a new high and closed a little lower on the corn and beans, and that's a little hook reversal down. So we're probably going to stay in this consolidation pattern we've been in here for about the last 2 weeks for corn and beans both. Wheat, it was all over the place. Quite a bit of spread activity between the three Chicago, KC and Minneapolis, just sort of jockeying around back and forth in through there. Probably the outside markets, particularly the energies, kind of got everybody scratching their head. This made crude oil topped out there last week at 126. Today we moved below $100 a barrel and got as low as 97.89. I don't know if that's just a function to take out the week longs or whatever, but with the world events taking place in through here and the energy market backing up like it did, it's got everybody kind of in a holding pattern. Going into 11 o'clock, the commodity fund sold about 12,500 contracts of corn, 4,000 contracts of bean oil. They bought about 1,800 contracts of beans and about 2,000 contracts of wheat going into midday there. The March futures went off the board here. The March corn at 7.28 and a quarter. The May's at 7.48 and a quarter, so there's 20 cent spread there. March beans, 16.87. The May's are 16.70 and a half, so there's really no lead gap right in that area to A small little difference there, but for the most part, nothing like that corn. So hopefully the corn won't want to go down and pick off where the march went off there.
Yeah, so that does happen. So in the regular flow of markets, when one futures month goes off, oftentimes the following month will try to hit that mark, whether it's lower or higher. That's a pretty good size gap. Could offer some pretty good support, I would think, too, potentially, or if it were punched through, might be a bad sign, I guess.
Well, I'm going to be optimistic and say it'd be supportive because we did see 159,000 ton corn sell to Mexico. And if you look at last week's weekly export sales report, we're seeing some fairly decent sales at these higher price levels. So the world is jockeying around, still trying to accumulate some inventories. Now, basis has backed off quite a bit due to the margin calls and uncertainty, but for the most part, there's some buyers around, and there's just not a whole lot for sale. Everybody's got their hands in their pocket. One, I think a lot of beans were sold, prior to this due to the fact they were too wet last fall. Nobody really wanted to storm. Then also they took advantage going to year end. So there's not a whole lot of beans for sale. Corn solely dribbling out for the most part. But if you go back and kind of in history and kind of look at any time you have inflationary fears and uncertainty, particularly in the southern hemisphere, those producers were just tight holders, not knowing where they'll be. And now we're having grain hold up in these countries, particularly Argentina, higher export tax, talk of Russia banning exports. A lot of these countries do not know or uncomfortable with a lot of grain flowing out of their country. They want to make sure this food inflation kind of stays in check. So, the trade's going to be continue to watch what comes out of these different countries. And that's something we cannot control as a producer. If this country comes in and bans exports or lets exports come out, that's a major market maker. So you got to kind of not just sit back and say, well, if things will be okay, they might not be okay.
Yeah, on the Argentine front, the Argentine government, I think, saying we're not going to let exports go through until we reevaluate. The second part is not what they said, but what they meant, till we reevaluate the tax, what the tax should be on exports of beans. I don't know whether it was a meal as well. I think it was really on meal, but you can help me out on that if you know the answer to it. But still, they're at that. Were they at 31%? They've been horribly high and have stayed that way for a long time. Still, bean meal comes out of that country in a big way most years, I suppose.
Yeah, a lot of processing takes place in Argentina. They're kind of the product country out of the southern hemisphere. Another thing about the southern hemisphere is, they've had some adverse weather and stuff, and there's quite a bit of talk that corn-wise, there might not be a whole lot of corn come out of Brazil or the southern hemisphere until we get more into July. So a lot of moving parts around the world.
Anything from the war in Ukraine that has continued to spook the market in a different form than it already is? I know there's the potential Russia-China working more heavily together. And I think I saw some idea that 40% of maybe the crops might not get put in the ground this spring. I don't know, that there's just an awful lot still happening there.
Yeah, the Argentine farmer is just optimistic as heck. I know there's been quite a few, I don't know how many interviews, but a few interviews come out of there, and they're going to go ahead and just like our farmer, one of the most optimistic person in the world, and they're going to do their best. But yet in the background, they kind of say, we do have to defend our country, and there's some other things in there. But they're going to, as of right now, if they can get fuel, seed, and fertilizer and everything, I think there's a chance on that. The winter wheat's already in the ground, so hopefully that will be taken out okay, so matter getting these other crops in the ground. But the headline that's probably the concern is, you mentioned there, Russia and China teaming up. That's not good.
Hey, thank you.
You bet.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You may hear Kurt again, if you'd like, on our website at WILLAG.org. There you'll find a lot of our ag programming, in fact, and a way to listen to us as a podcast, too, at WILLAG.org. Well, in today's agricultural news, senators from farm states across the nation are saying that energy inflation compounded by the war in Ukraine is crushing farm profit margins here, and that the White House needs to reverse its energy policies now. Here's how Nebraska Senator Deb Fischer sees it.
The cost of fertilizer is up 200%. Gas prices are at an all-time high, and they have been rising for months.
It takes so much more to put a crop into the ground these days. You've got higher diesel fuel costs, higher fertilizer costs, you got higher equipment costs, but a big part of it is energy.
That was South Dakota Senator John Thune. Here's the top Senate Ag Republican. His name is John Bozeman from Arkansas. He's talking about input inflation from February of last year to last month.
Natural gas up 48%, diesel fuel up 54%. And then fertilizer up 171%.
On that fertilizer issue, North Dakota's John Hoeven, senator from that state, is also concerned.
I'm talking to farmers and ranchers. They're worried that they are going to be able to get anhydrous and other fertilizer and other inputs. So, yes, they are very concerned about that.
The GOP lawmakers argue it's time for the White House to reverse policy and to turn to more homegrown domestic energies like biofuels. Again, here's South Dakota's John Thune.
Biofuels, biodiesel, higher blends of ethanol like E15 are readily available to displace Russian oil.
But Thune complains that the White House doesn't seem particularly interested, instead focusing on the push towards electric vehicles, which is happening on the consumer side already and being pushed along in a late front from D.C. He says, really, Washington needs to get interested and get interested in a hurry in, quote, biofuels. Let's stay with fertilizers for just a moment and Washington, D.C. The United States Department of Agriculture has announced it will support developing additional fertilizer production in the U.S. to address rising costs and spur competition. The agency will make $250 million available this summer through a new grant program to support independent, innovative, and sustainable American fertilizer production to help supply American farmers. To address growing concerns about competition in the agricultural supply chain, USDA will also launch a public inquiry seeking information regarding seeds and agricultural inputs, fertilizer, and retail markets. Recent supply chain disruptions from COVID-19 to the war in Ukraine have shown us how important it is to invest in this crucial link in the agricultural supply chain here at home, says Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack. Fertilizer prices have more than doubled since last year due to many factors. The top producers of major components in fertilizer include China, Russia, Canada, and Morocco. Belarus also provides a significant share of the world's potash exports. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, each Monday, we usually speak with a land-grant university agricultural economist. Normally, on this Monday, we talk with Frayn Olson, of course. It is spring break. He's not available. However, the National Association of Farm Broadcasting happened to speak with Randy Fortenberry from Washington State University. He says international issues have always had a big impact on the global marketplace, sometimes good and sometimes bad, but it always has an influence on the U.S. farm economy.
On the grain side, the real big gorilla right now is the Ukrainian-Russian conflict. But even for the other crops, what really matters is how competitive we stay in the external market. And right now, I think the big question is what happens to the value of the U.S. dollar.
Again, that's Washington State University ag economist Randy Fortenberry. He says with the Black Sea region exporting so much wheat and corn, the war there will have an immediate impact on growers this year and potentially for years to come. And he was quick to add that China remains a big wild card as well. Last year, China purchased a lot of soft wheat from the United States, and they purchased about 13% of all exported American wheat. But Fortenberry says it looks like this year China will drop back to pre-trade war levels, purchasing roughly 5% of wheat exported from the United States. And while that means China could be a growth market for the year, the big question really remains is where does China come down on the war between Russia and Ukraine?
Do they tend to side with Russia and say Russia has a right to recognize these statelets that are claiming independence because it might be more consistent with the way China thinks about Taiwan and Hong Kong? Or do they tend to be more Western thinking in the sense that they don't believe that anybody has much to gain from a larger scale conflict there. So how they play, you know, whether they more align with NATO, let's say, in terms of their response to Russia, or whether they sort of more align with Russia could have a lot to do with their trading relationship with us.
Our thanks go to the National Association of Farm Broadcasting on this Monday for bringing us comments from Randy Fortenberry at Washington State University. On this Monday, let's check in with Mark Russo. He is at Everstream Analytics. Thank you, Mark, for being with us. Let's begin here in the United States. It feels like spring where I am. Can you start in the Delta, which is one of the first areas to begin planting in the U.S.? What do conditions feel like down there today?
Well, Todd, as we look at the outlook for the Delta the next couple of weeks, the pattern is going to be on the active side with frequent chances for showers and thunderstorms. However, it doesn't look overly, you know, wet enough to cause significant disruptions with early, you know, fieldwork operations or very early planting across that area. So it could limit things a little bit. But in the net here, it's, you know, boosting soil moisture, and rainfall totals do not look widespread and heavy enough to be a major concern at this time.
And do those rains back far enough up into the western and southwestern areas that they pick up some of the hard red winter wheat growing regions, which have been deficit through the winter months and fall for that matter?
Yeah, we are not seeing any indications that those more meaningful rains will shift back west into the areas that need it there of the Plains hard red winter wheat belt. There will be some systems coming through the central and southern plains, but similar to recent systems, the bulk of the more significant rainfall amounts will be further east and kind of outside of the core of acreage. So it's not a bone dry pattern in the Plains hard red belt, but certainly no sign of any fundamental change in that, you know, drier pattern across the region.
Let's continue to dance our way across the growing regions of the United States, go straight north and then back to the east across the central part of the Corn Belt.
Yeah, as we look ahead for this week, overall rainfall looks to register generally near normal across the southern and the eastern section of the Corn Belt. Northwest areas will be on the drier side, which with some snowpack currently in place, that's always a concern at this time of year with any kind of snowpack and any kind of heavy rainfall that could result in more significant flooding. But not expecting any of that here as the most active conditions are well removed from that area.
Anything of note in South America today?
Well, for late developing soybeans in Argentina and southern Brazil, there will continue to be opportunities for rain the next couple of weeks. And that's also true in the southern safrinha corn areas where rainfall is badly needed to help improve soil moisture for the new crop. So it does look like some improvement will be taking place, but we still need to watch that southern safrinha corn belt longer term as they have the driest conditions overall, and it would take numerous weeks to even months to replenish that soil moisture for the new crop. And at this time, we're just not seeing any indications of an exceptionally wet pattern, at least looking out from now through month's end or into the early portion of April.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics, joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Monday afternoon. It is public radio for the farming world. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand whenever you'd like. You can do that at willag.org. Just click and play from the website, The Closing Market Report or Commodity Week, our midday report as well. And, of course, you can always find us as a podcast. Check out the podcast page. And you subscribe to our podcast right there at willag.org. Finally today, just a quick reminder that tomorrow is March 15th, and that's the day that crop insurance and ARC and PLC decisions must be made by farmers and landowners. It's a vital part of the risk management strategy, of course, for the coming growing season. Chad Smith from NAFB has some details.
Tom Zacharias, president of National Crop Insurance Services, says it's important to talk to your crop insurance agent today about the right way to protect your farm.
It protects farmers across the country, no matter where they are, no matter the size of their farm, or what crops they grow. It's a flexible risk management option for every farmer and rancher. The important thing now, if they haven't done it, is for farmers to sit down with their agent and carefully evaluate the crop insurance options available for them. The farmers will see that their premiums are higher this year due to the higher commodity prices and higher price volatilities. In some cases, these are in excess of 20%. Wheat volatilities are extremely high this year. These higher price elections can provide more coverage, which will help offset some of the increases farmers are experiencing on input costs. Most importantly, farmers should visit with their agent to determine the best coverage for this year's crop that balances the need for that effective coverage, but still in the affordable range.
As the world continues to face increasing challenges due to climate change, the safety net provided by crop insurance is a farmer's first line of defense.
Weather is a driver of crop failure, and uncertain markets will continue to be a concern for farmers. Crop insurance is here to financially help protect our family farms. For 2021, crop insurance insured more than 460 million acres, providing $137 billion in crop risk protection.
Farmer success depends on good weather and a healthy environment.
Success of America's farmers depends on good weather and a healthy environment. One weather disaster can drive a family farm out of business. Fortunately, over 90% of America's insurable acres are protected by crop insurance. Farmers who planted cover crops should visit with their agent to see if they qualify for additional assistance through the Pandemic Cover Crop Program. They must also report these planted acres to FSA by March 15th.
Make sure to talk to a crop insurance agent before the deadline.
Crop insurance can help farmers recover quickly after a disaster by delivering aid in a fair and timely manner. Crop insurance is effective and timely, which is why farmers continue to trust in this essential risk management tool to protect against the unexpected.
Again, Tom Zacharias is president of National Crop Insurance Services. Chad Smith reporting.
Our thanks to Chad and the National Association of Farm Broadcasting for that report. Again, a reminder that tomorrow is the final sign-up day for both the ARC PLC decision as well as crop insurance. Contact your agent as soon as you possibly can. Thanks for joining us on this Monday afternoon for the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.